Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. That's out of the Black Belt. And catch the live stream there also. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And then that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. And that's Facebook search engine. Just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening and interesting articles and blogs that you can download, read at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's Time for an Awakening timeforawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, special guest is joining us. He's been here before several occasions. I consider him a good friend, activist and organizer and legislative commission chair of NCOBRA. Brother Cam Howard will be here. The subject tonight is reparations, all things centered around it. And we'll get into that conversation with Brother Cam after we come back from a brief word from our sponsors.
Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum at 7th and Arch Street here in Philadelphia. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellen.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine this day. I'm looking forward to our conversation around this topic with Brother Cam. I think it will be energizing, informative, and help us. But specifically, I have to be selfish, help me kind of sort through where we are in the reparations movement and towards that ultimate end of political accomplishment.
Yeah, it's been some changes since Brother Cam has last been with us, but I'm glad that we can reach out to him and get him back to give us an update on the reparations front and exactly what's going on. You know, let me read this before I introduce Brother Cam, and it's words that everybody knows or possibly should know if they don't, from Frederick Douglass. It says, "If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet depreciate agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its many waters. This struggle may be a moral one, or it may be a physical one, or it may be both moral and physical, but it must be struggle. Power can seize nothing without a demand. It never did and never will." I just want to introduce our brother that's been on the struggle here on this front for a number of years. Activist and organizer and legislative chairman, COBRA, Brother Cam Howard is with us. Brother Cam.
Hey, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, man. It's a great pleasure to be back on the show with you. Thank you, man, for having me again.
How are you, sir?
I'm great. I'm great, man.
I'm glad to hear that.
I know, Cam, I know it sometimes when you can get a chance to come up for air, I mean, you're right back down, back down in the waters. But
that's exactly right.
I'm glad to have you with us tonight to, you know, the last time you were here, we were talking about H.R. 40 and because you were involved in the rewriting of it and the reintroduction.
That's correct.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the legislative part of it and how you were trying to get the more Black Caucus involved. And at the time, I think it was 28 members, 20 something. I see now that number hasn't changed much as far as Black Caucus members getting aboard. But I want you to talk about it because a lot of things have changed, especially here in the States since we talked last. First, before we get into a lot of different areas of the conversation, talk about the latest on the front in reference to the Black Caucus being involved in the new H.R. 40.
Yeah, so last time I was on the show, it was the 115th Congress. You know, every Congress is a two-year period. And so there were, I think, 29 or so congressmen on in the 119th Congress. And, 115th Congress. The 116th Congress began in January of this year. Mm-hmm. So every Congress, you have to start back over. So at the end of the 115th Congress, that bill expired. So it was reintroduced in the 116th Congress by Sheila Jackson Lee. We were able to get 23 Congressional Black Caucus members to sign on with her. At the time it was introduced, those are called original co-sponsors. They stand with the person who introduced the bill when it's introduced. So the more original co-sponsors you have, the more you can get other support down the road. So we were trying to get all of the co-sponsors of, I think we had over 30 plus in 115 Congress. So we were trying to get all of them to sign on as original co-sponsors when it was reintroduced, and that hasn't been the case. So I think now there's 29. We had six other congresspersons sign on after it was introduced. We had, I think, three new congresspersons who had never been on at all, which is a good sign. We think we can get a lot more. The goal has always been 180 to 100 to move it out of committee. this new Congress is interesting, though, because we are positioned to have the type of movement that we've been looking for a long time. It's in the subcommittee on the Constitution and civil rights. Steve Cohen, white congressperson out of Tennessee, is now the chair of that committee. He was the congressman. He has a predominantly black district in Tennessee, but and I think it's in Memphis. But he was the congressman who introduced the House version of the apology, the first apology, which called for that apology called for, and used the word rectification, that this country must rectify the wrongs. They didn't rectify, but it was in that particular apology. The Senate apology, as you know, did not have that word in it, and it had some other stuff. But he's the chair of that committee. He went on record less than 2 weeks ago, saying he favors a hearing. And so a hearing, and I'll talk about that a little bit later too. But anyway, he's the chair of that committee in the subcommittee in the judiciary. In the judiciary, the chair, that Congressman Conyers, is the chair that post when the Democrats had the House. Steve Nadler, out of New York. He's the chair of the committee. He's also has been a longtime member, co-sponsor of H.R. 40, maybe in the last 10 or 12 Congress, last five or six Congress, but over 12 years, he's been a co-sponsor. So we have the chair of the subcommittee in which the bill exists, as well as the chair of the Judiciary Committee, where the bill sits. Both have been longtime co-sponsors of H.R. 40. So that's a pretty good position to be in right now. And it's early in the 116th Congress. We're only in the third month. That's 24 months. We're only in the third month. So it's early. We have some things in place. Sheila Jackson Lee is calling for hearings. And generally, before a bill can come to the floor, hearings are generally scheduled around the bill. There hasn't been hearings since 2000 on H.R. 40. There's only been one time when they had hearings, and I think it was in 2005 or so. Mm-hmm. Might have been earlier than that, but it hasn't been a hearing since then. And so Sheila Jackson Lee has called the hearings. Steve Cohen, who's the chair of the subcommittee in the judiciary where the bills exist, is calling for hearings. So that's a pretty good position to be in. The National African American Reparations Commission is preparing the hearing memorandum. You have to file a memorandum to determine, to state why a hearing is necessary. I am the lead writer on a group of NARC commissioners who are preparing that memorandum. We're looking to have hearings, congressional hearings in June. That way, Congress can call experts in to give testimony. They can question them about, the particular bill, why the bill is necessary, et cetera. And then hopefully it'll get out of judiciary and get to a full vote. Now, on the floor, a full debate on the floor. Now, in the past, as I talked before, Nancy Pelosi, who's now the House Speaker again, when she was House Speaker for the Obama years, she was blocking H.R. 40. Mm-hmm. But recently at a conversation at Howard University, she said she was in favor of H.R. 40. So things are shaping up where we can get this bill out of subcommittee. Certainly we're doing the work behind the scenes to get it there and get it to the House for a vote.
Brother Cam, who is, because you mentioned earlier in your conversation, that three new members had signed on. Who are the three that signed on?
I cannot give you. Ayanna Pressley, I know, is one, because she was the latest. She just signed on. We try to send thank you letters to all of the congresspersons when they sign on. And I know that she signed on probably less than a week and a half ago.
Okay.
Because we just sent a thank you letter out to her. But she was the, I think she's very new in Congress, and she signed on. There was a Asian of Indian descent signed on, who is also new. And And I can't think of who the other one is.
Because I think the last time I checked, I saw that out of the new people that went on, the congresswoman out of, I think it's Minnesota, Rashida Tlaib.
Yes, that is the other one. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Rashida Tlaib. Yeah, she's also new who came on. So those are good, very good signs, because at one time we were, like in 2009, when we had kind of, and COVID kind of stepped away from H.R. 40 because we didn't see a lot of, we weren't getting a lot of help from Congressman Conyers' office for a minute. So we kind of stepped away from it. But in 2009, he called us to, not to share this with you before, he called us up to Detroit, and COVID up to Detroit wanted to meet with us, said he really wanted to push this bill. Obama was the newly elected president. He was the chair of the judiciary. And we went back and we worked on that, on the bill, tried to get these co-sponsors. And what we determined at the end of that particular Congress was that this was 2009, 2010. Every congressperson who had been elected post-2000, black, was never on the bill. All the congresspersons that were in office in 2010, who had was elected prior to 2000, only one had not been on the bill. So we saw that there was a generational type of divide that they didn't know the history. They didn't experience some of the struggles of Jim Crow and some of the struggles in the 60s and 70s, you know, the Black Power movement or the Civil Rights movement. And so they didn't have that historical foundation, and they had never signed on. This was like 2009, and some of them came in 2001. So it wasn't like they had just got there. And so, but now we see congresspersons who are just getting into Congress are signing onto the bill. So this is the shift. And so we were able to kind of make that analysis based on the work that we had did that shows that this is very promising.
Brother Cam, so when you see some of the new people signing on, at least here, because I'm a deal here first before I kind of go internationally. But when you hear men like Clyburn, James Clyburn, I'm going to read this quote out of The Hill last week, said that Representative Clyburn, a South Carolina Democrat who happens to be the highest ranking African-American congressman, says that he thinks pure reparations will be impossible to implement. When you hear statements like that, and also statements this one here, if I can kind of get it queued up, I just want you to just expound on it from your position as a legislative chair of NCOBA. Let me pull it up.
While you're looking for that, I am no longer I'm a legislative commission co-chair. I'm now actually the male national co-chair.
Okay.
But we have a sister out in the Baltimore area.
.com. Give a
Henry,
dollar.
Who's the,
no, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Kenneth Henry, who's the co-chair of the Legislative Commission, and she's doing a lot of work in the D.C. area, actually visiting the Hill and taking in Cobra information packages directly to the congressperson. So we have someone on the ground there, and I thought it was best for me when I became a national co-chair to kind of turn that over. A lot of the work over to someone else, and she's doing a great job.
Okay.
And what's her name again? What's her name again, please?
Kenneth Henry.
Kenneth. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I just want to play this clip along with the comments by Jim Clyburn. Okay. Let me play this clip.
$2, because we're going to show that the people, we can do this.
Does Cory Booker have a specific agenda for black people? And if so, what is it?
Look, man, I as an African American, you know, as a black person, so much of the realities for all Americans, if you look at the lens of African Americans, they've been in many ways the conscience of this country from its founding. When we said we were going to be a nation of liberty and justice for all, the African American experience challenged the inadequacy of those words when it meant reality. And so.
No, I just wanted to play that clip because initially when he was asked about a specific agenda for black people, it was laughter and stumbling, and then he started talking about all Americans. So when you hear comments like that and like the comments from Clyburn, just give me your opinion on that as far as the work that you're trying to do and accomplish and hear people talking like that.
That's primarily from an integrationist viewpoint, you know, both of those countries. I remember I just had stated that in 2010 when we were reaching out to congresspersons, a co-sponsor, and all congresspersons elected prior to 2000 had signed on except for one. Clyburn was that one. So he has never been, he's been in Congress almost 30 years probably, and has never once signed on to H.R. 40 in the many years he's been there. And it's been introduced for 30 years.
Wow.
And so he's one of those people of African descent that clearly is not see himself as one who is has to legislate on our behalf. That's the same feeling I have from the other gentleman made the comment. They feel that they do not have to, they don't have to deserve a specific treatment from this particular country based on our contributions, not only contributions, but from the atrocities that was committed against us.
Brother Richard,
you're going to find that. I mean, those were on the plant. Those were the same type were on the plantation, you know, and they were given all type of names. But, you know, we in Cobra, you know, we hold the position that all of us have been injured, man. And that injury reveals itself in different ways. You know, those of us who are out here in the struggle, we use the struggle as a way to heal ourselves.
Okay.
But we hold the position that we've all been injured. And those are comments and positions taken by people who have been injured through this period of enslavement and subjugation.
Okay.
This country. Yeah.
You know,
but they're dangerous. That injury is a dangerous injury, man. You know, for the people.
And it's interesting when we think about, you know, not being in South Carolina, you know, the type of representatives they are putting, the black constituents in those areas, the kind of representatives they are putting and maintaining, it raises some questions of, you know, what is going on about the black populace there, because I'm thinking of this other one, that's the senator, isn't he from South Carolina, a black senator from South Carolina.
Right.
Has the same kind of thing.
You're talking about Scott,
you know, and yeah, Tim Scott, you know, it's just that's just when we're talking about that this has to be also, you know, or the way I look at it has to happen from the ground also. So, you know, with what kind of work has to be done in our community to when they're, you know, people in our community are putting these kind of representatives in office and are pleased with it in spite of their condition. But, you know, Brother Cam, I wanted to, you know, kind of raise this thing about, you know, the signing on and ask, like, what do you see as the challenges around the CBC, the Congressional Black Caucus, in the sense of, for the numbers that has that grown to, and I heard you make the generational analysis, but it seems that for the numbers that has grown to, that is still not more participating and just even wanting a study. And as you've been going through these years and times and looking at these classes, as they call them, of the representatives moved through the CBC, is there some other insight that you can give us of why there is such a resistance compared to the number of individuals and just signing on to the bill for the study?
Right. I wish I could answer that, brother. I can only say that, you know, here in Chicago, I look at the congresspersons here who are traditionally signed on. We've had upwards of 5 congresspersons in Chicago sign on, a white woman, Hispanic man, and 3 people of African descent. Now there's 2 men of African descent. The Hispanic guy retired, and one of the sisters, a sister who took over, one of the brothers who was here who had signed on traditionally, Jesse Jackson Jr., who lost his spot to Robin Kelly, she has never signed on. And we always had that seat as a co-sponsor. And it's because of who put her in office. It wasn't the people. It was corporate interests and corporate dollars. So when you see a lot of blacks who are not signing on to this particular issue, it's because of who they have are beholden to, and it's certainly not the people. And so we have to, that's the type of groundwork we have to do on the ground. We can't do that as a national organization.
Right.
We have to do that, have people go in busloads to those congresspersons' offices and say, hey, you know, this is what we desire. You know, we put you in this, and our votes put you here. It might have been somebody else's money, but it was our votes that put you here, and this is what we want. So we're trying to do a ground game in a lot of these particular cities where CBC members have not signed on. And so that's the strategy that we're going to unroll within the next month or two.
And that becomes, you know, really, I mean, I'm really a you know, an advocate that that's the understanding that we should make our analysis on when we're talking about, you know, political interests or even economic that our own self, like, what is our capacity on the ground? Because it seems that those corporate interests and their representatives do, even if they're nullifying people's participation, they are working to keep us from moving things in our own best interest. And I just think the listening audience and people who are in these different groups have to understand that it's a lot of work there, you know, in our community and this around this here issue, but it has to be done there. Which raises the question, you know, because right now there's a lot of stuff going on in the, I'm characterizing it into the media climate. And I want your feedback of whether I'm really, is this media driven or is this truly, as we talk about populist movement, is this truly a populist driven movement around reparations in this moment?
It's interesting. When you say media, I'm thinking you're talking about social media in large part.
Right.
And then
social media and the corporate media.
So the social media is definitely pushing corporate media to at least inquire about the issue of reparations from different candidates. So definitely social media is pushing that. But that's only on the executive end of the struggle. When I mean executive end, I mean there's three branches of government. You know, you have the executive, congressional, and the judicial. And in the judicial, we had a challenge in 2005 where the federal judge said we didn't have standing. And we haven't really pushed judicially since then because it's very expensive, one thing. And that's really the major issue because it's very expensive. And our group of lawyers have not strategized yet, but they are engaging in some strategy around how to push this thing legally again. But then you have the executive piece where the president is targeted or whoever's in the office, whoever's seeking office is targeted. And that's what a social media is and the current media is focused on, you know, the Democratic candidates. We focused on Barack Obama when he was there to do something executive through executive order. We got the National Black Caucus of state elected officials to file a resolution, and these are black elected officials on the state level across the country, file a resolution seeking Barack Obama to institute a commission while he was there. So that's just one aspect of the struggle, and people are saying they're trying to see that as that's the entire struggle with the government. And there's other strategies around struggle too, not just through legislation either from the president or from the Congress. So we cannot abandon the congressional struggle because even if we win an executive struggle, they're still going to have to create a commission. And so, and that's something that's going to take place if they win in 2020. But we're here right now in 2019, and 2020 is, you know, 21 months away. So we got work to do right now that we're doing on the congressional level. So that's not being moved by media at all. That's on the groundwork that's, you know, behind the scenes. But what isn't being moved by media, social media, and other media is this whole notion of a president coming into office and saying that they're going to create some type of structure to engage in some type of reparative initiatives. And we don't know, based on these candidates, they don't even know what it is, but we do know from H.R. 40 what are the outcomes of a commission, because we wrote it into the legislation. So that's just a lot of some people call it misdirection. I don't want to say it's misdirection, but I think it's an overemphasis, a focus right now on that to the exclusion of the congressional piece that's right here that we can be doing a lot of work on right now.
And that's one of the reasons I raised this, Brother Cameron Elliott, because I keep emphasizing, until we can build that cadre of people on the ground in our local area to force our states and local representatives, because that's what speaks to the party, right? That goes to another part. But I noticed that the local representative here, Brother Ori, he's had a discussion conference locally around from Ancobra, and he had a state representative who was pushing in legislation, which came to my attention. There's few individuals at state levels that are pushing for the language of reparations at the state level. And the reason why I like that is because it takes the local community to push those legislators. And the question is, if the state pushed it, wouldn't that push the party and the national agenda around the issue of reparations from your understanding?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I really, see that as very, again, promising in the movement. And that's, from groundwork, things we've been doing on the ground. In Illinois, there was a resolution by a state rep. Myself and some others went down to the state house and gave testimony. That was a resolution that was passed unanimously, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, male, female, gay, whatever. It was a unanimous vote calling on President Obama to move in the issue of reparations through a commission. That has been passed again in Illinois, calling on Trump to do the same. In New York, Ancobra was working with state assemblyman Charles Barron, who introduced a New York State Slavery Commission, tied in after H.R. 40. That we understand that Vermont has just initiated a reparations commission for the state of Vermont. It's going to be introduced in the Vermont House of Representatives. As you said, the brother in Philadelphia is talking about it, one being done in Pennsylvania. And so we see all of these states, black state elected officials who are saying that, yeah, this state had an issue, had a real benefit and real hand in the enslavement of African people. New York, there were more Africans trading in New York than anywhere else in the world. And that's a thing that State Rep. Assemblyman Charles Barron is trying to push for. And so, yeah, these things are very promising in that they push things even nationally. Because one thing is when a state calls on the president to engage in reparations, it's saying by default that the state doesn't have the resources or capacity to handle the issues that has resulted from enslavement on its own. It needs national resources. So when more and more states make that call to the president or Congress or whatever, then that puts more ammunition in our pockets.
And my last point, Elliot, and Brother Cam, is that this thing around the local, because and ultimately for us who are so, us meaning African Americans who are so tied to the Democratic Party, it seems that we have to push the party. And the party has been neglecting black people at the local level. There's been continuous talk about that. And, these party presidential hopefuls, they also are being directed by the party, as you gave an example with Nancy Pelosi early on, and now she's shifting. So the question of we doing something locally, you know, or people who are having these momentums, directing people locally is like really critical around the H.R. 40 legislation or any reparations consideration for that, because there is a other avenues that I hope we can explore in relationship to what the polling say, you know, Gallup polling says around reparations. But I just wanted to throw that out, why I think it's necessary.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree that, you know, the local struggle is, you know, feeds the national conversation. Yeah, I can't disagree with that at all. I totally support that.
Yeah, Brother Cam, you men and women involved that have been on the forefront of this demand, whenever you see a crack in the wall, y'all going to run through it. And I know that you will. But looking at it from, and I'm looking at it from my perspective of just, you know, analyzing Europeans, because they kind of sit and analyze us. I don't trust Europeans and their opinions on things, and especially in this vein. So when you see people like Pelosi and others that have been adamant against reparations and not even want to conversate about it, all of a sudden talking about it, what's your personal feelings in reference to that?
Well, I think it is that the Democratic Party, we've shown the Democratic Party, especially with the Obama election, even going back to actually, I was saying this on another call, even going back to Bush 1, we showed the Democrats and this nation that wherever the black votes go, there goes the presidency. If you recall, when Bush 1 was running, his running mate was Dukakis. The Dukakis came out with this really Willie Horton commercial. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had a black brother who had went to jail, came out, got out, and then, you know, did some other very egregious crimes. And that became the face of the so-called black man. And black people really turned off about that. And they didn't vote for Dukakis. And that's when Bush 1 got in. And so they have been seeing, and again, you know, with Barack Obama, with Clinton, Barack Obama, you know, and even with Clinton's successor, who vote was stolen from him by Bush 1, Bush 2, Gore. You know, the black vote came out for Gore as well, but that, you know, that was the first rigged election where they stole the vote, stole the presidency. But they have seen since for the last 20, 25 years that where the black vote goes, there goes the presidency. And so through social media, the group, I think hashtag ADOS was one of the groups that that forced the discussion by these presidential candidates. And they are pandering to the black vote. I think it's just pandering.
Okay.
We'll see once, you know, if a Democrat is elected, if it means anything more. I would like to see them come out in favor of H.R. 40. There are four or five senators who are running. They should sign it. They should create a Senate companion bill right now if they're serious. Mm-hmm. They don't have to wait until 2020 if they're elected. If they're serious about reparations, why isn't there a Senate companion bill? Why hasn't there never been a Senate companion bill? Even though we had a senator, Vanderpool, I think his name is, who was willing to engage in that in preparing a Senate companion bill at one time. So we know there are some people who would join that if one of those candidates came out and said, okay, I really believe in reparations. Here is the proof, and initiate a bill like H.R. 40.
Let me go to
But I think it's, you know, it's kind of into the black vote. They know the black vote is important on the presidential level.
Okay. Let's go to North Carolina. BTR?
Yeah, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, greetings to the host, Elliot, Richard. And Mr. Howard, the guest, I believe I may have spoke with Mr. Howard before or in the past. But anyway, James Clyburn, Can you quote what he said again? Because I want to make sure, you know, I got the proper context. Did he say straight up reparations? He don't think that there's support for straight. Can you tell me what?
Well, he said, in the quotes here, pure reparations would be impossible to implement.
So my question then is, and this leads into what y'all were just talking about in the pandering and the media, and what are reparations? You know, what is pure? What does he mean by pure reparations? You know, BTR News, we've been doing a series of programs on the question of reparations. And what is reparations? Are you talking cash? Are you do you want cash? Do you want Federal Reserve printed notes? Is the United States really going to do that if that's what you're talking about? If that's how you define reparations, where it's what, 7-8 trillion, this, and they had to go to the Federal Reserve to borrow that money because this government is broke. And I don't want to, you know, go off on a tangent on the Federal Reserve and how worthless them dollars is. But do you really think the U.S. government is going to go to the Federal Reserve and go $9 trillion or however many trillion that you figure is going to be, you know, to pay reparations? I don't think that's politically possible either. Not at this time, not with the people that's in office right now. So, you know, my question to Mr. Clyburn would be, well, what do you mean by pure reparations? And I think that people, you know, the media is playing the role in it. Y'all correct me if I'm wrong. I'm 56 years old. I started paying attention to elections when I went into the military and Reagan was in office. Okay. And I don't ever remember reparations becoming a issue asked of any candidates until perhaps Barack Obama. I don't think it was asked of Clinton. Certainly wasn't asked of Dukakis when he was running against Bush. It only recently became an issue, and I think with Obama. What do you guys think?
Well, it was an issue before Barack Obama, and it was asked. But Brother
but
Cam,
that's brought up with the presidential candidate and the media covering it.
Go ahead, Brother Cam.
I think Dr. King raised it with Johnson with his speech on, you know, we had a check, came back insufficient funds. I don't think it was called reparations.
Yeah, you're right.
So, you know, I think, and Clinton, you know, Clinton attempted to answer it when he had his race commission, created a race commission, respond to the issue of reparations. He's quoted in the apology saying that, both him and Bush are quoted in the apology saying that they understand that the enslavement of African people has a direct cause to the conditions that we experience today. So no president has been not challenged on this issue of repair. There's not been a time in America where we have not raised the issue of repair of our peoplehood. So every president, I don't think there's been a president.
Yeah, I just don't remember this much media coverage, though.
So what happened around media, we had more media coverage in the late 90s, early 2000s to 2001, September 11, 2001, on this issue than we have today. We have a very short-sighted view of the history of the movement in this country. Mm-hmm. There was more media coverage then. I mean, it was a tremendous amount of media play in 99, 98, 2000, et cetera.
Around the Durham Conference.
This is a resurgence, definitely a resurgence in the last 10 years.
Okay.
Question,
though, is when I see Wolf Blitzer asking a Bernie Sanders, and I'm glad Mr. Sanders didn't pander for the black vote as Julian Castro did. And Julian Castro never said he supported reparations. He said he supports H.R. 40. Big difference in saying I support the study of something. But
he did say reparations as well.
He said he supports
reparations. He did use the word reparations, yes.
Okay, well, the clip that I saw of him, he said he support H.R. 40. Right. So, but again, my question again is, what is reparations?
All right. Now I'm glad you went back to that. Because there's no such thing as pure. There's no such thing as pure reparations. I've never seen that term anywhere in all of my studies around reparations. Internationally, there's a term called full repair, and that's what NCOBRA is pushing, full repair. There's a international case, a ruling on reparations in 1928 that says reparations must wipe out, quote, all consequences of the crime, unquote. Mm-hmm. And all consequences came up to mean full repair. And so we know what full repair is. There's a international set of protocols that say this is what you must do for that to be full repair. And I think I mentioned those five components last time I was on the show, but I can mention them again now quickly. The first one is cessation and guarantees of non-repetition. We must stop the criminal acts. We must overhaul this criminal justice system because these criminal acts are being committed against our people on a daily basis. So that's just one aspect of cessation and guarantees of non-repetition. There's other aspects that we can do. But the criminal justice system is the major component of cessation and guarantees of non-repetition. Community control of police, we guarantee non-repetition. So cessation is the first component. The second component is restitution, returning people back to the way they would have been had they not been injured in the first place. That's where all your educational programs, your economic development programs come in, your other type of programs workforce type of programs, you know, those type of things that give people back a sense of worth and value to their lives. The third component is compensation. Yes, compensation is a legitimate form of reparations under full repair, under wiping out all consequences of the crime. We are not going to be fully repaired with these other aspects. Compensation is necessary. How do we create wealth? You can create wealth by giving somebody a check. You can create wealth by giving them a grant for open up a business, a micro loan, a micro grant, not loans, but micro grant or full business grant. You can help them achieve wealth by eliminating taxes for a certain number of period. So there's various ways that compensation can be done. Right. But compensation is a real component of reparations. And then the fourth area is satisfaction. Satisfaction is returning the dignity back to people. You can do that through apologies. You can do that through monuments and museums. You can do that with the right telling of the history, which we must demand as a part of the reparations. So our children will not grow up thinking that to be black in this country is to wear a badge of shame. We have to give the dignity back to our children. And the fourth component is rehabilitation. There are physical and mental injuries that we still suffer as a result of our sojourn in this country. So those things have to be repaired. So full reparations, we know what full reparations, I have no idea what pure reparations is, but we definitely know what full reparations is. And that's what we've, NCOBRA has been pushing for the last maybe 6 years or so, this whole notion of full repair.
Yeah, and you know, number one, now I remember I had spoke with some people from NCOBRA on New Abolitionist Radio. And you talked about, number one, stopping the crime. And the crime, and you mentioned the criminal justice system. But I believe that, you know, we came to an agreement with NCOBRA that slavery was never abolished because the 13th Amendment has an exception clause that says that you can be, you know. So the crime has never stopped. And so on terms of reparations, the clock is still ticking. It's not just about what was done to our ancestors. Or, you know, your ancestors prior to 1865, but the crime continued. And so, you know, I'm so glad, you know, that NCOBRA. Now, the other thing I wanted to point out, though, NCOBRA, it's an international organization, or it is part of an international movement for reparations with support around the world, including in Africa. And that'll be my last question. Can you speak to that piece?
Well, NCOBRA is the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America. We have some affiliates in other areas of the world. I think we had an affiliate in Ghana and two or three of the Caribbean countries. But they're actually working on behalf of reparations where they're at, but they are affiliated with COBRA loosely. But in COBRA, you know, our struggle is for reparations from corporations, this government, state, federal, and local governments in the United States, corporations and institutions that have enslaved our ancestors or were enriched by the enslavement of our ancestors, and wealthy families that still have that wealth that was built. So here in America, but we are part and parcel of a international reparations movement. People of African descent, this one way I find a very easy way to explain it, is that when we were corralled in Africa and took to those holding pens, whole families were taken, and they were sent in at different times. They didn't all, if they were captured in June, they didn't all leave, you know, those holding pens in June. Some, they would hold them in those pens for 8-9 months. And so some family members would leave at one time, and another family member would leave at another time. One family member, a sibling, may go to South Carolina, and another sibling to Jamaica, and another sibling to Brazil, and a parent might go, you know, to Colombia. So we have literally family all over the diaspora, blood relatives all over the diaspora. We are truly a one people. And so we can't, you know, say that our brothers in Guyana or Colombia don't deserve to be repaired. You know, so we see this as a global act at reclaiming our rightful dignity and humanity in this country and repairing what has happened to our dignity and humanity on this planet, not in this country, but on this planet we call Earth. As a people, so it's one movement that's being fought locally around the world.
Thank you for your call, Brother Scotty.
I'm sorry.
No. I'm just thinking the caller for his call. We're gonna take a brief break, and when we come back, we're gonna continue the discussion with activist and organizer and member of NCOBRA. A working member. I forgot your title again, Brother Cam, because it changed.
National male co-chair.
Okay.
But just a member of the COBRA is good, brother. Just to be a member, it means you have to do the work.
You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We got some calls on hold, and we'll pick up the discussion right after break. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in 3 states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information.
Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard the special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you've called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the Slave Theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put them anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Encourage, let me just say this before our time winds up, and that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lauren Green sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are, and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back. It's time for an awakening, and we're in conversation this evening with activist, organizer, and legislative member of NCOBRA, Brother Cam Howard is with us, and you can get involved in the conversation too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Cam.
Yes, sir.
Before I go to the callers, because we got some callers waiting, I want to kind of and I want you to help me kind of put this into perspective. After the Durban South Africa conference in 2001, World Conference on Racism, when members of it was an international coalition of people that went in reference to reparations, according to the writings here and in my memory, December 12th movement went in Cobra, members of NBUF, and some members of the Nation of Islam, if I'm correct. Billy Cam?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
You are correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And according to what I've read or my reading, I just want to read the established three goals, because it was a planning meeting on how this was going to be presented to the world internationally, because it was other members there from other areas of the diaspora and the continent that was together this issue. And they came up with three goals for Durban. The one to characterize the institution of slavery and the transatlantic slave trade as crimes against humanity, which crimes against humanity has no statute of limitations in international law. Number two was to assert the economic motive of white supremacy in this crime against humanity. And number three was to call for reparations. Now, if you put that into perspective, and I'm talking about just since 2001, we can see that a lot of things have happened worldwide in reference to reparations. In fact, I pulled this article up, and it was a article from MSNBC, in fact. MSN, I'm sorry. That Benin, let me get it because it's right in front of me, that France was returning all the treasures that they had looted from Benin, and it said that they are to do it without delay. And it says this decision by the French president should not be seen as an isolated or symbolic case, because it could trigger other former colonial powers to return African treasures to their countries of origin. So we see that a lot of things have been happening on this front since 2001, since that conference. Talk about some of the things that NCOBRA and some of the other groups are in concert with on the international front. Sir Hilary Beckles and other people on the European continent, on the African continent. Talk about some of these things before we go to calls.
Yeah, so, and that's a great question. Before I get into that, I would just like to make a comment on one of the sisters. The second to last sister that you, the clip that you played was Mama Joanne Watson out of Detroit. Powerful sister, powerful, very powerful sister. You know, NCOBRA's having our 30th national convention in Detroit. Mama Joanne Watson, Reverend Dr. Joanne Watson, is our conference co-chair. So if your listeners got anything out of the clips, she was a sister who was talking about race first, you'll get a chance to be with her and other members of NCOBRA. You come out to our conference in Detroit, June 20th to the 23rd. Still got time for early registration. But I just wanted to throw it in because I heard Mama Joanne's voice and I talked to her often. She's been one of my biggest mentors in the movement. And so I just want to pay homage to her. Yeah, man. The World Conference Against Racism was the greatest Pan-African victory in the last, since the decolonization movement. Last 50 years, 40 plus years, it was a total Pan-African victory. I was in Ethiopia in 2014, and I was at dinner with a brother who had a conference on the Sudan in Ethiopia. And we were at dinner, he had asked me, I left South Africa and went to Ethiopia. And he asked me, what was I doing in South Africa? So I told him I was on the reparations panel, and I talked about the tremendous benefit that the World Conference Against Racism has given to the African movement globally.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked me, did I know how the World Conference Against Racism came about? And I didn't. I just knew, you know, what happened at the conference, but I didn't know how it came about. And so this brother was a diplomat in Geneva, Switzerland. He said, Brother Roger Wilhelm, who's an international lawyer, he's with the December 12th movement. He came to Geneva in 1996 and said to the brother, there should be a World Conference Against Racism. There had been two previously. The last one had been in 1978, some 20 years, almost 20 years earlier. And so the brother, within a year, had the United Nations declared that there would be a World Conference Against Racism. So it took a brother from New York, go to an African who was living in Switzerland, and move that piece. There was a preparatory conference held. There's preparatory conference held in the five groups within the United Nations. There's a group of Latin American Caribbean states. There's a North American group, which is Mexico, Canada, and U.S. There's a European group. There's the African group, and there's the Asian group. So the three things that you talked about, what they agreed upon, that was held at the group of Latin American Caribbean states. Roger Wareham and some other people went down to Chile where the meeting was held and said, African people all the world, we can't go to this conference with all our individual issues.
Okay.
Let's collectively go with these three things that speak to all of us, because, you know, transatlantic slave trade, slavery was a crime against humanity, the economic component to those crimes and their reparations that do. They agreed upon that, but the Latin American states was getting pressure from the United States and they wanted to pull out. The Caribbean brothers leaders said, no, this is the language we're taking. If you don't want to push this language, we're going to secede from this group and form our own group. The Latin American leaders came back into fold. So the language went to South Africa. However, the African group was not aware of this language. And so the brothers, that's when December 12th and in Buff and in Cobra, took about 400 brothers and sisters from the diaspora, went there to lobby these other group heads of state. And they were told, well, what's the African group saying? We're not going to get on this if the African group is not on it. So they had to focus all their attention on the African leaders, of the government leaders. When they got up on it, then that's how it made it into the actual outcome document. But it took a brother from New York to go to Switzerland, to go to the Caribbean, to rally forces throughout the entire diaspora, then go to Africa and convince the African leaders that this is what had to take place. And it was a collective global African victory. Now, some tremendous things happened. And that's a Pan-African victory. Not a lot of people are aware of the significance of that type of cooperation and that type of energy that we, you know, took Africans literally in every aspect of this planet to achieve that particular outcome. And it was a tremendous blow to white supremacy. Coming out of the conference, Brazil was the first country to, under the Lula da Silva government, to really attempt to apply the Durban Declaration Program of Action. They, in 7 years, they eliminated 20%. They eliminated 25% of people from poverty. So about 20 million people they raised out of poverty. In America, there's 11 million people of African descent in poverty. So in 7 years, they raised twice as many people out of poverty than they are in all of African, in our particular population here in this country. They made education free to all people of African descent. They initiated economic development projects to people who are Colombos, those groups who have fought against enslavement and settled into their own communities. They made it against the law to discriminate against anyone who practices an African religion. And when the brother introduced that at the review conference, all of the African leaders stood up and gave him a standing ovation. There's nowhere else on the planet other than Brazil where African religions are respected to that particular level by the government. And so it was a huge thing. And also in Brazil, just recently last year, one particular Colombo group was awarded 200,000 hectares of land. That's the size of three Chicagos or the size of New York and Los Angeles combined. The Supreme Court in Brazil awarded that land. That's all coming out of Durban. We talked about the CARICOM. because those were crimes. It was stated in Durban that what took place were crimes. The Caribbean governments are able to sue the European governments at the International Criminal Court based on these crimes committed, what they call native genocide and enslavement of African people. That's a major development that came out of Durban. In Zimbabwe, we know that they went through their economic enhancement project, where they took back the land that the colonizers had taken, the farmers. They took back the mines. They said that those were taken via criminal actions, and we are taking it back because we're writing these criminal actions. So had not Durban ruled colonialism as a crime against humanity, they couldn't have proceeded legally in that particular fashion, or there would have been, you know, all type of international chaos as a result of it.
Mm-hmm.
Here in America, we've been able to go up against these corporations and say, you know, what you've gained was a result of a crime. We haven't been successful to get exactly what we want, but at least we can make that claim that these are criminal acts, more than just morally bad, which is they try to get us to say it was a moral argument, it was a sin, America's sin. No, these are actual crimes. It's international crimes, and we know the perpetrators are. We know there's still injury, and that we can actually, the Durban Declaration should be enforced. There's been some other issues, victories that came out of Durban as well. The International Decade of People of African Descent came out of Durban. They created a body called the Working Group of Experts of People of African Descent. As you know, they came to America a couple of years ago and concluded that America must engage in reparations. That was a victory. On the ground, grassroots organizing victory that we hosted them. When they went to these five cities, we made our case that the injury still exists, and they made a ruling. That particular ruling actually is can be used by anybody on the planet, or any African descent population on the planet. They can use that particular outcome of the Working Group of Experts visit to America. So it's that's how we benefit from everybody's struggle globally. You know, we can all use, like the Brazil case, that's a Western government's highest court that made the ruling that those lands belong to the original inhabitants of that land. And so that particular legal ruling can be used anywhere, and I'm pretty sure that it will be used in other areas outside of Brazil because it's a major ruling from the highest body of a so-called Western nation. And so, you know, the rewards, if you will, from Durban have yet to really fully be received. But it is Durban that it has us all seeing, no matter where we're at on the planet, whether it's in Europe or America, South America, Central America, African continent, we're all saying, based on Durban, that the transatlantic slave trade, colonialism, apartheid, slavery were crimes against humanity. And there's no precedent in the world for that type of behavior. It never happened in human history anywhere, what has happened to people of African descent in this country, not only in this country, but on the planet. And so it's a major victory. It shifted the whole reparations argument. So, yeah.
Let's go to Newport News. Newport News.
Good evening, comrades. How you doing?
How are you, sir?
All right. I'm going to try to keep this short and sweet. And first off, Cam Howard, I've been following you for a while. I like the work you're doing. I want to try to narrow down on something you said to make sure I understand you. When you said you thought AVOS was pandering, number one, I'll tell you ahead of time, I've actually worked with these people for about 3 years.
I didn't say AVOS was pandering. I said that the presidential candidates were pandering.
Okay, I want to make sure that I'll go back over the thing. I heard you kind of talking about them saying that they bought it up, but I'm going to tell you there's been a concerted effort by the people in ADOS to bring this to the national limelight. And I'll tell you personally, nobody is trying to deface or defame or disrespect the work that's done before that. I've actually been on a few things and tell people. I actually came in contact with NCOBRA like 1989 personally. But I want to frame this. I'll tell you where I'm going with this ahead of time. I truly believe what Angela Davis said is true. I'm 65 years old. A lot of people won't admit what my father told me when I was about 12 years old. He had a fourth grade education. Movements are pushed primarily by young people because they are the ones that are not economically bound by debt and obligations that go along with maintaining a family. And I truly believe that since I've gone 5 decades and seen this. And COVID has done a lot of work. And I hear you talking about what's going on in the diaspora and you talk about the people raised up from poverty. But I can tell you this, I know for a fact in Nigeria alone, the poverty rate was about 60 million 8 or 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's 85 to 90 million people in poverty. But the number of billionaires is triple. So, and I'm going to try to make this point and then ask you another question. So that tells me imperialism is doing its job across the globe, including on the continent of Africa. And ironically, we've had a black president that expanded AFRICOM from 8 nations to 52 that we know of. So my point to you is, I don't understand this trope that people are saying that ADOS is being divisive, when in fact, my whole premise, and I've said it to the leaders, and I get a chance sometimes to interact with them, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And I don't know anybody in ADOS that has not championed CARICOM and the Brazilians that are getting the things that they need, the people in Bolivia, Venezuela, Nicaragua, the Afro-Latinos that are doing what they need to do. But we got to be honest about this. In this country, in this North America that is the United States of America, our African descendants of slaves have been told by the primary party, the Democrats, that you can't be a strict, loud, rowdy, agitating, instigating advocate for yourself because country comes first. And I'm going to say this in 5 decades, I've tried to put it in perspective with people. At 12 or 13 years old, I saw a movie going on at 13, 1967, in black and white called The Tenement. They talked about how devastating it was in Chicago. Less than a year later, I saw National Guards in the streets in Newark, Camden, and Trenton. Nothing has really changed when you look at the percentage and the realization of our life here in America. So it's no longer going to be a thing about appeasement if, in fact, reparations is not put on the table. No one cares anymore whether or not Clyburn gets to be there since 1997 when the Supreme Court carved out a district for him. But people in Denmark, South Carolina, have gone 12 or 13 years with poison water. They've had the descendants of other civil rights workers, Bakari Sellers, that actually represented that state right there. And he couldn't do anything until he lost his political seat. Now he's on a legal firm that's representing them in a class action lawsuit. See, there's a lot of implications go along with that. So I'm going to say to you, in the end, if this reparations thing goes forward, we don't really care that the Joy Reads are not saying who brought it to light over these last 36 months. No one is saying other people haven't done work. But you personally know that from 2003, when reparations cases were taken to the court actually said, hours of C-SPAN has taught me this. Basically, what the court did to these people with all of that work is say to them, you cannot document a direct linkage to who did the tort. Now, people like Gerald Horn have actually done work since then, and several other people. For the sake of time, I won't go into their names, but I know that you know them. So they made a specific claim that they dismissed those cases without prejudice. So that means if you can establish this linkage, you can go there. One of the key tenets of ADOS is lineage. Lineage matters. It doesn't matter if you come here as a Haitian or a Nigerian or anything with a green card or any of that. None of that matters. So people who can actually stake a legal claim and make use of all the work that you've done in NCOBRA since the late 80s has to be linked to a specific tort by specific people. And I've heard you kind of touch on them. So I want to ask you again, what is there in the minds of some of the people in Encobra, especially the legacy people, that means ADOS is divisive. I don't understand that.
Right. Well, that's a good question. And it speaks to the whole notion of making a argument or making an issue when there was never an issue. For instance, ADOS states that their struggle is for African descendants of slaves. We don't use the term
slaves. No, of slavery, sir. But, slavery, the institution, not the people, because we actually know they're enslaved people.
Well, you can't descend from an institution.
Let him answer it. Let him answer the question.
I want to make sure you understand the terminology so when you answer you understand where I'm coming from, because that might be part of the problem, the terminology and the nomenclature. Actually, I'm one of the people that was instrumental, I think, and getting it changed from being just an acronym for slaves defacing and dehumanizing human beings. So the actual descendants of slavery is talking about the institution, that the tort goes directly to the continuing institution of slavery. I think that's one thing that's not been worked out from leaders so like your expertise. Yeah.
So that's a new twist. And I'm not going to argue that. Well, initially, I understood it was African descendants of slaves. You just said that you tweaked that. So I said that's a new twist, that tweak from slave to slavery, to the institution of slavery. That's a new tweak or a new anyway. So I was saying that they made an issue where there was never an issue. They came out saying that this is only for our struggles, only for Africans who had or Americans who had descended from the institution of slavery in this country, is not for anyone else. Well, that was never an issue, because Encobra has always fought for reparations for people of African descent from this country. So what was the issue? And every other reparations organization in this country was always targeting repair resources from the American government. So there was never an issue. And it made it an issue in a way that it said, from what I understand, I'm not really an expert on ADOS. What I've been hearing or what I've been reading is that it excludes the brothers and sisters who helped us get to this particular point. And it wasn't just brothers and sisters, as I just shared, in America. To get to this point where that whole history has been called criminal behavior. That means America is a criminal entity in relationship to African people. France, England, Spain, Portugal, all these are criminal entities. They're not governments that have any legitimacy in regards to African people. These are criminal entities in regards to us. So that was a international struggle and international victory. We cannot exclude, there's no way to even exclude ourselves from that. So, you know, I'm as Encobra, and I've been trying to share this with other people. Encobra is a unifier in this movement. We do not say anyone can't fight for reparations. I mean, who would say that you know, you can't fight for reparations, you can't fight to be repaired from the crimes committed against you and your ancestors. So we're not saying that they don't have a right to struggle in this country. We Encobra, the leadership.
Yeah, who doesn't have a right? I'm trying to make sure I understand.
We're not saying that ADOS, we're not saying anybody don't have a right to struggle. We're saying point blank that everybody has a right to struggle for reparations in this country. Anyone and everyone has that right, because we've all been injured. And you have a right to struggle to be repaired. So we don't have an argument with that. There's some philosophical issues around the whole issue of Pan-Africanism that we have a challenge with, some individually and some organizationally. But, you know, those things are things that shouldn't stop us from doing the work on the ground. For instance, we had an event on February 23rd, Reparations Awareness Day, in Chicago. We provided William Sandy Darity. There was members of ADOS there who supported us. There are some members in Chicago who was having a March 25th event in honor of the remembrance of enslavement, International Day of Remembrance of Slavery, that I'm going to go to. And it's organized by some members of ADOS. I mean, we're the work on the ground, as my brother said earlier about the local work, is really what pushes this movement. It's not so much what we're doing nationally, but what we're doing locally. And locally pushes the national question. So I'm down with anybody who's going to fight for reparations without alienating anyone else in the movement.
Well, I give you a follow-up on that?
Sure, brother.
Because you actually touched on something. You'll probably find out here in a little bit. I was instrumental in making sure that one of your contacts in Chicago stayed in close contact with you to try to iron this out, because the public display has been nasty, but I'm going to say
it has been nasty.
ADOS has never said that other people cannot. And I'm going to frame it to this way, because I'm older and I've seen other movements even locally here. And I'm from the South. I'm from Yorktown, Virginia. If you want to know, I'm 22 miles away from supposedly where Angela set foot here at Fort Comfort, which was now Fort Monroe, about 5 miles from Hampton University. So I'm giving you some context. I've been in this all my life, and first got introduced to it at James Welland Johnson High School, first through sixth grade, because I had black educators instead of instructors as teachers. So I'm going to frame it to you this way. William Sandy Darity, and you know him well, he did an interview that he said it as pristine as most people that I know, and he said he's got almost 2 decades worth of work here. No one in ADOS is advocating that immigrants or other people from the diaspora cannot help. What they have said is you got to be good allies. You can't be like the James Clyburns that have been in Congress for 97 years, and the only people still suffering in your district are the black people that voted you in, but there's 78 buildings put in by pharmaceutical companies that has a complex named after you. You can't be a Bakari Sellers that represents somebody in politics, and now you don't speak out for the people until you can join a law firm and you can get some money in your pocket. See, I'm a firm believer that 1710 Meritorious Manumission is just a new phase here in modern America. So when Sandy Darity says his work is specifically for American descendants of slavery as practiced here in the United States, and he's willing to help anyone else throughout the diaspora help to go to their specific claim, because specificity is key, as I noted with you when I said about court rulings. So I'm going to say to you, brother, I think there's really a chance for us to clear up the language, because all of us are going to be needed in this struggle, and we can't stop imperialism until we can do something here in North America. Perfect example, Peace March, the latest one that was over the summer, March on the Pentagon, barely had 1,500 people there. But I can tell you why, because most of the people that want to go there, that are mentally into it, they can't afford to lose their job. They can't travel and go there and have somebody take that pay away from them and their whole family sinks. So I say to you again, I offer a hand in peace and tell you, I think this can be resolved if we stop looking at the personalities and stay focused on the purpose. I applaud your work.
I agree with you that that's the United Front.
Thank you for your contributions, sir.
Yeah, I agree with the brothers, Carl, that there has to be a United Front. There are some philosophical issues within the movement that has been raised by ADOS that I think there has to be a softening of a position, or I really don't know what is needed for all of the attacks to stop. I really don't know.
Well,
what I do know is that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say this, and then I'm gonna go to another caller. I've heard Brother Otis. He's a frequent listener and caller to the program, and the language that I've heard from other folks, I guess, quote unquote, the leaders of that movement, is not like the language I'm hearing from Brother Otis. He might feel that way, but some of the other people might not feel exactly the way he's talking about, because the language I've heard has not been like that.
I believe, and I've been looking at some of the tweets and some of the responses on Facebook, and there's a lot of members in their movement who don't agree with the attacks, or don't appreciate being attacked, but so certainly they don't agree with the type of communication that's being shared in social media and cyberspace.
And I like to add that I hope, no, I don't want to say hope. I wish, because an elder told me live in hope, die in despair. But I wish that it's something that relates to in any social movement about the growing pains. And that's why I think that, you know, especially when it gets to leadership, because I think there's a seat for every group representatives to say, to be able to sit at the seat, whether it be locally or nationally, say, of an organization of NCOBRA, which is dealing with reparations, if you're dealing with reparations, because that is the goal, right?
Right.
That, you know, it's a question, but when people are, or leaders are, and movements are beginning, they start off like any child doing things. And I don't mean to belittle it, I'm just making a characterization. You know, it's a lot of things that may not know as they find themselves in a space that they're participating in. And I wish that that's what the case is, that even with the question about language, as Brother Elders raised, whether it be slavery or a slave, if that's an evolution of growth, then the whole question that the growth that we're all in this together becomes a point, and that it really is about a ground game. I might be, you know, beating a drum that's not real, but we're competing against forces who don't want reparations within the party, within the governmental structure, within the imperialist system that's on the ground. They're not, they may be creating policies somewhere internationally and nationally, but they got troops on the ground that they're, whether that's at their committee level or at their state level, at their Congress level, that is implementing policies, their think tanks, their, you know, all these things that are saying, we don't want this to happen. And to me, that's what we're competing against. And until we can continue to create the apparatus that makes us strong enough to really be, what's that word, formidable against those ground efforts, our internal growth on one hand, or a need to be, rejuvenated or reinvigorated on the other hand, that's just a part of our dynamics to be able to get the forces together to fight, because it is a fight.
For sure.
I apologize for that. I just, as I hear this, it's just...
No, thank you for that, brother.
Let's go to 215. Are you there? 215. They must have stepped away. Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to New York City. New York City?
Greetings.
How are you?
Greetings.
Peace. A lot of the questions were already asked. I just wanted to just kind of reach out to see more information, how I could be involved here in New York City and what actual programs are here that could be useful and beneficial. I'm glad Brother Otis called. He said something that I found very interesting, because it's something I've heard reiterated in different ways in regards to the change. And as we get older and more responsibilities, yes, of course, the younger generation is the forerunner. And that being said, as a parent, I still feel like it's important for me to set my example. So that's why I'm calling. I really want to get more information on how to start being more involved, and at the same time, you know, help my brothers, my son along in that aspect as well. Thank you. I'll mute my line.
Wait a minute, brother. Yeah. What's your name?
Yes, Cujo.
Brother Cujo, just stay with us. Brother Cam?
Sure, yeah. We do not have a ground game structured in New York. We have some members in New York, but we don't have our chapter operational in New York as we used to. However, that does not mean that if you elected to join NCOBRA, we couldn't, there's not work for you to be done, work that can be done on the ground in New York, because again, we're getting ready to roll out a national policy, a national initiative around going to particular congresspersons' office in their districts. And so that's work that can be done, because you know, there is a real atmosphere right now at the congressional level, right now. Now, I'm not talking about 2020 at the presidential level. I'm talking about a real atmosphere right now at the congressional level to move this issue forward, in particular H.R. 40. And we're poised to do that. So definitely, if you want to go to EncobraOnline.org, you can see how to become a member. And then we can, my email is EncobraChicago@gmail, or you can go to info@EncobraOnline@gmail, and you can communicate with us personally. But definitely go to the website, become a member, and help us strategize and do some of the work that we need to be done on the ground.
Brother Cam, is Brother Barron, is, I know he's worked with Encobra and MBUF and others.
Right.
Would that be a person that he could contact in New York?
Well, you know, Robert Barron, Charles Barron, him and his wife, Inez Barron, longtime supporters and I think at one time members of Encobra. Again, Brother Barron initiated the New York Slavery Commission. Introduced that bill, naming Encobra as commissioners, December 12 members as commissioners. Certainly he is a pro-reparations person. He may need some work on the ground in New York, assisting him in getting greater awareness of that particular bill. So certainly he should reach out to Brother Charles Barron as well.
All right,
that's a New York struggle, a local struggle that he can definitely get involved with.
All right, Brother Cujo?
Yes, sir.
Also, it's a brother here in Philadelphia. I mean, Philadelphia is only a two-hour drive from New York City. functioning that does a lot of work on the chapter here of Encobra.
Ari.
Brother Ari Maretazan.
Ari Maretazan, a past national male coach here.
Yeah, so he's here in Philly, and I don't know Brother Ari's number, but if you utilize Facebook, you'll see him on there. You can reach out to him. Said that you just tell him that you heard Brother Cam Howard on Time for Awakening, and you can mention my name.
Sure.
And Ari, you know, he'll hook you up. Go ahead.
Yeah, and Ari okay. is the Midwest not the Midwest, the Northeast regional representative. So he's representing I think 8 Northeastern states. So New York is one of those. So, yeah, so he'll definitely be able to get
you
plugged into some work. A-R-I.
Yeah.
R-E-A-R-I. Maretazan. M-E-R-R-A-T-A-Z-O-N.
Yeah, if you look on Facebook, you can message him and tell him that you heard Brother Cam on the program tonight. And reach out to him.
And I think they have a website, phillyandcobra.com or .org. I'm sorry, phillyandcobra.org.
Okay.
Got him. He popped up right on Facebook right away.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Thank you, gentlemen.
Brother, all right, Brother Cujo.
Yes, sir. Thank you, brother. Look forward to having you in as a member, man.
Yes, sir.
Peace.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go to 646. 646.
Yeah, what's going on, Brother Elliot, Richard, and your guest, Brother Cam?
How are you?
What's going on, brother?
Not much. Listen, brother, you know, August was talking about these other fractions of the reparation movement. Now, my concern is this. They're trying to divide this into something that is not beneficial to African people. And it seems like most things that happen within our community, we're gonna fall for it because of the gatekeepers. You know, this clown that was on Joanne Reed's show yesterday, Mark Thompson, you know, the Angela Rise, and the rest of these Negroes. Listen here, brother. I don't know if it's about egos. I don't know how this nonsense with Pan-Africanism, nationalism, and all that other isms is really going to allow us to honestly move forward in this situation without the gatekeepers picking us off. I'm saying this to you as a man who defined yourself, I would suppose, as a Pan-African and a nationalist. Am I right or wrong, my brother?
That's correct.
So as someone who has the understanding of the elders like Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben and others, I think that in order for us to move forward, you may have to take a leadership role and try to figure out how you can bring these individuals like the Yvette Cornells and the Antonio Moores to the table to sit down and come to some sort of consensus on how we can collectively come together and deal with this issue. Brother, let me tell you this, as an African, them are Negro peas. Negro peas have, as far as I'm concerned, only one agenda. That's to get as close as they can to the daddy. And the daddy is the white man. The white man plays Negro peas against us all the time, and Africans never stand on the necessary principles that we must to deal with them. It's at a time now in our development, brother, that we're going to have to set aside certain things and put them Negro peas in check and just have to figure out how we can collectively on this issue here work together for the advancement for our people. And let me tell you this, Brother Cam, I know it's a hard thing dealing with a Negro peen because basically they sick and you really don't want to act with them. But this what is happening right now in the stage that we are at as African people. We gotta do something because these brothers and sisters, they really don't have a clear perspective for them, what they're doing. They're getting a little bit of shine, a little bit of daylight, and all of that. But listen, we're going to have to figure out how to work collectively with them. Because if we don't, ain't nobody going to get nothing. Because once the daddy gets finished using your asses, he's going to just cast you aside and go on to the next Negro peen agenda that they decide to come up with. So I'm saying to you, sometimes we got to figure out how we're going to work together with our so-called brethren, who really ain't our brethren, but hey, it is what it is. So I'm saying that you are someone who's been in this moment way longer than them Negroes have been. Y'all got to figure out how y'all can work this together. If not, they got to be eliminated. Because those are the type of individuals who put everything that one who has worked before them out the damn window and out the door and let it all go to hell because they didn't get their way. And we are at a point to where we're going to have to start treating other black people like Mao did his people. It's just straight up. It's getting to the point to where South African burning neckties are going to have to be used because we don't have too much longer to be in this position where we're not reclaiming our African selves, man. Seriously, this situation not getting no better. In all honesty, it's getting worse. So, you know, my whole thing is we got to figure out how we can collectively come together to do this work, to get something done, because, you know, and I know they don't want to do nothing for us. And the bottom line is, if we could all come together and put together a consensus, then we could be able to really present something to them to be able to get reparation. Because you know, in their minds, they think if they tell Negroes we're going to give y'all some money, everybody's going to be happy. But I know and you know, if they give us a dime, it'll be right in the white man's hand the next day, as crazy as we are. It's not like we got institutions. It's like we're in a position to really sustain ourselves or anything. So I'm just hoping, brother, you can do the necessary work to gather all of the forces together so that something collectively could happen for our our best benefit. And as Africans, that's what our role should be. You can't expect no Negro king to lead us to sovereignty, brother. And that's what this is all about, the sovereignty of the African family. That's my position.
Brother Jay.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks, for you, thanks for your contribution, man.
Okay, have a good day. Talk to you on Friday.
Right. Let's go to squeeze a couple more in, Richard. Let's go to 267. 267.
Peace, brother Elliot. Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Brother Omawale calling.
Hey, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. It's been a fantastic show tonight. Peace to the guest, brother Cam Howard. How's everything, brother?
It's good, brother Omawale.
I'm doing good, man. I was just calling because I was listening to the last brother dial in, and he asked the question, could NCOBRA, find, I guess, common ground with Yvette Carnell and Antonio Moore and the IDLS folks. And I heard the brother Cam Howard mention, quite a few times during tonight's interview that there's some philosophical differences that, they hope, can be worked through. But, somebody asked me on Twitter earlier today, do I think a negotiation, or some type of closed doors conversation can be had between the two camps? And my answer was, ADOS, as they have explicitly communicated and spoken via social media and via their blog, are pursuing a project of Americanism, and Americanism at all costs. And they feel that reparations is the means by which they will obtain full citizenship, and they are willing to set everything else on fire in order to get that. You know what I mean? I don't think that, when the brother talked about, reparations meaning full repair, and the first definition, or the first tenet that he gave of the five was that the war that they have waged upon our community has to stop. That's not even, one of the tenets that ADOS has. So in terms of coming to the table with them to have a conversation, I think Yvette Carnell has already plainly stated that they're not interested in being African. They're not interested in African identity. They don't mind other immigrants being allies and supporting their justice claim in America, but at the end of the day, their ultimate goal is full citizenship and Americanness. And, I'm not seeing how the two can gel with one another, but I would be open to hear, what Brother Cam Howard has to say regarding if he sees there room for any negotiation or conversation. And then the last part, just an off-the-cuff question I have for the brother, I'm pretty sure we all seen Mark Thompson on MSNBC. I just wanted to know, does he have any relationship with NARC or with NCOBRA? Because I think that he actually did more damage, especially in the social media space, by weaponizing NCOBRA against ADOS and then pivoting to referring to ADOS as Russian bots and telling us that we need to vote. So I think that actually was pretty damaging to NCOBRA's brand, especially for, people who aren't grassroots organizers, and the first time they heard of them or heard of NCOBRA was as a rebuttal to ADOS. So I would just be interested to get the perspective on those two things.
Let me deal with your second question first. Mark Thompson has been a member of NCOBRA, and I think he's still a dues paying member of NCOBRA. We have a lot of members of NCOBRA who are not doing any work. They on the ground, are not working with initiatives that we're doing nationally or locally. But they contribute because they think that this is a legitimate struggle, and they know that we need resources. And so we welcome that. Not maybe upwards to 60% of our members are just monetary contributors, maybe even more than that. Maybe 30% actually doing the work of our membership. As a member, he can, say NCOBRA. You're not telling him he can't say NCOBRA. as far as I think he mentioned on the show that he is becoming a commissioner of NARC. I know he's a member of another reparations group that I'm with, hashtag 40. He's a member of that group. So he's been engaged in the reparations conversation for a number of years. And like many people who've been in the struggle for a long time, have been angered by some of the comments of ADOS, where they are, in some instances, their leadership is excluding or diminishing the contributions that others have played in the struggle, as if, you know, the struggle didn't have any traction until they came into the movement. And so that's where I think a lot of the pushback is coming from. I saw some of the comments against Nkobla associates in the cyberspace as a result of his comments. I don't know about them being Russian bots, but I know that I've met many of them and have a good relationship with the ones who I've met. So to your first question, Ken Nkobla, first I'd like to say that you did a tremendous and a profound analysis of their political position of Americanism, and I agree with that. Nkobla was founded as a coalition, and the founders recognized that for us to win this battle, it couldn't be all nationalists. We had to open up the movement to people who didn't share the nationalist viewpoint. So they said all strata of the Black community, and whatever that meant politically, whatever political ideology you had, you were welcome to join and become a part of this movement. Because I think at that time, the majority of our people were not nationalists. Like when we came out of enslavement, the majority of our people were nationalists in thought, you know, and political ideology. But certainly that had changed by 1987 when Nkobla had started, and it's still the same today. And so they knew that the space would have to be open to those who don't consider themselves nationalists. The challenge with ADOS is that they don't think that anyone with any other political philosophy can struggle in this movement. So that wipes out all of the legacy organizations who have a strong nationalist orientation. Even though we don't push, and Nkobla doesn't push a political philosophy. I am a nationalist, I'm a Pan-Africanist, but I don't push a Pan-African or nationalist viewpoint on the coalition. So in that regard, there is room for some type of conversation, because it's already in our bylaws and procedures that the movement belongs to all of us. But they cannot be exclusive of anyone else who shares a different political ideology. And that's where the philosophical differences really will prohibit any type of coming together. And I think that's what you were talking about as well.
I appreciate that, brother.
I appreciate you too, brother Omowale. Thank you.
Brother Omowale?
Yep.
I'm going to reach out to you. I did reach out to you about a week ago, and we didn't connect. But I want to get you on within the next couple of weeks, maybe 2-3 weeks, because I want you to expound on that article that you wrote. Brother Richard shared it with me.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's no problem. I got a couple more articles coming down the pipe.
Good.
Please, Elliot, notify me when that brother's on so I can check out that show.
Good. I will.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon, Brother Omar.
All right, Brother. Peace.
Brother Cam, you know, before we kind of wind things down, you know, I pulled a couple articles off your page today, and it's just more evidence of what you were talking about tonight. It mentions that Australian Aboriginals won the right to sue the colony for land loss, and it went into in depth about why and how. They were able to do that, and I know it dovetails on what you talked about tonight.
Right, on the aspect that this, and the international community recognizes that those were criminalized. Colonialism of the Aborigines and all the crimes that were connected with colonialism were actual crimes, not just morally bad actions. And so, and I failed to mention Germany. Herero people in Namibia sued Germany and won some reparations about 3-4 years ago, all coming out of Durban, that international Pan-African struggle victory.
Yes,
thank you for sharing that.
Let's go to 908.
Hello?
Yes.
Let me ask you a question. The brother
who's speaking?
Reached out.
Who's speaking?
He reached out his hand. Hello?
Who's speaking? What's your name, brother? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, it's Sean from this old dirty state of New Jersey.
Okay.
The brother Otis reached out and said he gave a handout. He speaks for the position right after Yvette and Tone. I think Otis speaks for it. So why we just can't take Otis handout? Don't listen to somebody like me, because my concern is the people I see every day out here starving. And Jay, I get the call again that the slandering is going on, but I'm gonna talk to Jay personally. But if Otis gave a handout, because I'm gonna just speak for me and a couple of people I know. Nobody cares about being close to whiteness. We don't give a F about these crackers. We care about the brothers out here. Why is there no organization? We don't see none of y'all out here in Newark, Camden. We don't see none of them out here feeding, giving out money, giving clothes, giving mental health. None of these cats out here. That's our concern down here, man. Nobody want to be close to whiteness. And y'all sit here and listen to this foolishness and go along with it. So when a brother like Otis, who speaks articulately, speaks for the community, gives a handout, brothers reach out to Otis and let Otis take a hand from Otis. Now, people like me who y'all always think is angry, always can't think nothing is getting done, don't listen to me. No problem. Nobody listens to me anyway. But it's funny how Ferguson happened and nobody listened to me near Ferguson pop up. And we don't see anybody out there in Ferguson. Do you read the latest news? Cats out there dying that was in the march. Why ain't nobody out there helping them brothers in Ferguson? So I don't hear nothing about being close to whiteness. I don't care about a cracker. I ain't never laid down with a cracker. We ain't never had one over here at the house. We're not friends with them. We don't go to their cookout. I bet you ask your callers, Elliot, have they had white girlfriends, been to white cookouts, got white friends, hang around white folks? I bet you a lot of your callers will say, yeah, but they call here with their fists up in the African clothes and everything, and African pride and African this, African that. But how many of them could say that? How many of them could say that they don't mess with these white folks outside where they have to, which is work? That's all I'm saying from this point of view. Reach out to somebody like Otis that put his hands out. Everybody should be talking to Otis. You don't like Yvette and Tone? Talk to Otis. The brother Otis, he's calm, he's cool, he's very smart. Talk to that brother. But I just want to speak for people like me. Ain't nobody trying to get close to whiteness. We're trying to help brothers out here that's out here every day, man. That's every day out here struggling. When I go to a job interview and I go talk to another brother, he know, yo, we ain't getting it because all we see is Spanish here. Y'all don't even want to talk about that. Y'all want to talk about the blacks in Colombia. Yo, with all due respect, let the blacks in Colombia figure it out. I'm trying to figure it out for the brothers over here. Let them figure it out over there. Let the blacks in Mexico figure it out. I'm trying to figure it out here. When we get it figured out here, then we go ride on the ones over there in Colombia for them and ride on the ones in Mexico for them. But we're trying to figure it out here. And out here, you know what? People call me and go, yo, son, listen to this show. And I go, I don't want to listen to none of these shows. Al Sharpton, Paul Nelson, none of them. Because they don't speak to me and mine down here, man. But somebody say, you got to listen, yo. Call up, yo, listen to the show. And I listen. I go, this is why I stopped listening. Because nobody going to speak to the everyday. I don't hear no shows talking about the everyday cat out here. I don't hear no shows talking about why is my old lady niece getting suspended from school. Why she getting suspended from school? Because she's very precocious. Very precocious girl. Girl smart as I don't know what. Way smarter than me and my old lady was at her age of 9, 10 years old. But she's getting in trouble because the other idiots in the classroom thought they're going to have the teacher vote her out of class. What type of foolishness done? They don't want me to go down there because they know what I'm going to do. So I tell them, you know, get on the mother and father to go down there and don't get the girl suspended from school or suspended out of class. It's wrong. But we don't talk about those issues, man. This is everyday fights down here. How you can't get a job unless you speak Spanish?
The brother that rolled out with Martin Luther King, what was the brother that called Carl Show, the old head, who Carl gives a whole hard time to from Miami? He calls it North Cuba. I call Jersey, you know, North Mexico. Same thing for California and Texas. Same thing for Atlanta is turning that way from what I'm getting info. But no, I don't want to talk about that. We'll talk about your little organizations here being close to white. No, I don't want to be close to these crackers. Why it won't be new? I bet you ain't none of y'all ever harmed a white person. I bet y'all all got friends with them, friends with some of them. Come on, man, save that for we want somebody down here and see them tomorrow, feeding people, getting them mental health, getting them dental. You know what I mean? Little things like dental, so their mouths can stop hurting. We want things like that in the schools with the children. When somebody go to a school and fight with these people. These education people to say, yo, we with you, man. When you out here, you fighting for your niece or your children. Like I said before, we can't even afford children over here, but y'all don't care.
Okay.
I don't hear nobody talk about that either. I can't even afford a child. So who y'all going to have? These old mixed race?
Yeah.
That's who y'all going to ride with 20 years from now?
Thanks for your call,
half,
brother.
Black, half white, who sides with whiteness?
Yeah.
That's who y'all going to roll with 20 years from now?
Yeah.
30 years from now?
Thanks for your call, man.
And y'all find an excuse for that too, right? We'll find an excuse while we riding with them because we need all hands on deck. Meanwhile, all the blacks is dead out here.
I want you
and
to
worry about somebody
listen,
trying to be close to whiteness.
I want you to understand something.
He got on the radio Friday and said he don't give a damn about whiteness.
I want you to understand something.
He got on the radio and said that.
I want you to understand. Wait a minute. You think you're going to overtalk me? Do you want me to cut you off? I want you
cut
to understand.
Off, nigga.
I want you to understand something before. I want you to understand something. I gave you 5 minutes. To say whatever you wanted. Any of those other programs that you're objecting to that you mentioned on this program, Sharpton or others, don't give you 2 seconds. So I gave you plenty of time, brother, and I hope you call again. And those areas where you're talking about, we can't hit every place. But those areas where you're talking about that don't have anybody on the ground, look in the mirror. There's a guy in that mirror that can get busy on the ground. Brother Cam. Before I let you go, man, one other article that I pulled off your page, man, that really made me smile, and I don't know whether you saw it, Richard, because I posted it. Some young ladies out of Canada, out of Nova Scotia. And I'm talking about real young ladies. These little mm-hmm. girls is 10 and 9 years old, wrote a book about reparations. Did you see that, Richard?
Oh, yeah.
Man, that when you see stuff like that, man, that makes you listen. I know that lets you know, Brother Cam, that your work is not in vain.
That's exactly right, and that's how you know. I think the last caller said, you know, we take care of our thing here, and then we help somebody take care of that thing in Mexico, whatever. It doesn't work like that, man. We all are feeding off each other, man, and giving each other strength. That book, Ours for Reparations, by these, I think they were 9 year old young African children, African descended children in Nova Scotia, Canada, who wrote that book. Man, I ordered 2 copies, and it should be distributed around America to our children here. So they'll get a chance to see how, and they're feeling the same thing. You know, it's not like they're not feeling the same thing in Brazil, in Colombia, in New York, in Chicago. Our children are feeling the same thing globally, plus it's the same global enemy. And so our children can benefit from this particular piece that was produced by their cousins in Canada.
Brother Cam, before you leave us tonight, give out any information, how people can reach you, how they can get involved with the some of the organizations you're involved in COBRA in particular, but you're involved in other organizations. Last time you was on, we was talking about the Black is Back Coalition. So just give out any contact you want or any information you want. The floor is yours, sir. Brother Cam? I don't know whether I lost him. Brother Cam, you still there?
I'm sorry, Elliot.
Oh, there ain't no problem. Can you hear me? Did you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Okay, good. Before we leave, give out any information that you want the listeners to know, how they can get involved, how they can get in contact, how they can join several of the organizations. I know you work with Black is Back Coalition, so the floor is yours. Give out all the information you need.
Okay. Well, sure. First, let me just thank you and Brother Richard, man, again, for giving us the opportunity to come and just share, you know, what information we have, man, on the movement, man, with your listeners. That's how we move the movement forward, man, is that we connect with people who has a media that allows us to share what we have. And so you're an integral component of the movement. Media is very important to the movement. So thank you, brother. Incorporate has our 30th national convention. It'll be held in Detroit, Michigan at the Charles Wright Museum and at the Timbuktu STEM Academy in Detroit, June 20th to the 23rd. You can go to incorporateonline.org to register for that event. There's still time for early registrations. Definitely want you to come out. The registration includes a membership, so your membership will be covered in the registration and access to the conference. Also, you can just go in and join Incobra. Again, at incobraonline.org, and just take out a membership and you're not able to come to the conference. You can immediately plug your interest in work. If you want to get involved in working in this movement, we can plug you. If you just want to contribute to the work that's being done, we certainly appreciate that as well. I can reach personally at incobrachicago@gmail.com. If anybody want to reach me personally, you can do so. Go to our website. There's some documents. One document we just a document that we address to ADOS and to those who are responding to ADOS. It's a kind of a document to say that there need to be some principles in this discussion. So you can go and get that particular document on our website, incobraonline.org. I'm with the Black is Back Coalition. You can go to blackisbackcoalition.org, Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations. We have an electoral candidate school in April, April 3rd, I think, and 4th, in St. Petersburg, Florida. There we share our 19-point political agenda for self-determination, which is a phenomenal document for a Black agenda in this country that's based on us moving our elected officials towards self-determination. So, for more information, you can go to blackisbackcoalition.org for that. And that's about it. Thank you, brother.
Brother Cam, I'll be in touch, man. You know that.
For sure, Elliot. Appreciate you, brother. And again, I'd like to listen in on Baba Omawale's call.
Good. I'll let you know when he's with us.
All right, cool, brother.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Richard.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it, brother.
Peace.
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 Richard, interesting discussion and lot of information was shared tonight. About the work that Incobra and some of the groups that are affiliated with Incobra, December 12th Coalition, MBUF, others are doing. I'm glad that the conversation that was had with him and Brother Otis, where dialogue is needed, and some of the other things that might not be conducive to unifying talk can be eliminated. So, I'm glad that those things were stated tonight. Information was shared where people can get involved. The brother called out of New York City and wanted to get involved. Cam told him that it wasn't a branch in New York, but it was people up there working on the ground. Charles Byron and his wife. And, we shared with him, Brother Ari, down here in Philadelphia. And he shared, because I didn't know that Brother Ari was the Northeast representative. So he can get tied in with some things if he wants to do work. And, listen, Richard, I'm glad that the grassroots people that we talk to all around this country, whether they're columnists, journalists, authors, activists, they're on the ground. So, and we've talked with a lot of people in time for awakening. So people that call this program that want to work in different areas, we do know people that we can tie them into. That's if somebody wants to work. If somebody wants to call and just blow smoke and talk a lot of stuff, you know, I give them the forum to do that. They can talk just as long as they don't get foolish. I'm not going to cut you off, leave you a minute, or blow you off the air like some of these terrestrial shows. I'll let you speak your piece. But don't give rhetoric about nobody's doing anything, nobody's on the ground, and all that other. That's foolishness. If somebody wants to work and get busy, we know plenty of people that have been on this program that we can tie them into. And I thank the Almighty that we are able to do that, Richard.
Yes.
If somebody wants to do something. But if you got somebody out there just want to just flap their gums, then, you know, it's a so-called free society, so you can do that too. And that's all I want to say in reference to the caller. He's not banned from this program because he's been banned from other shows. I've heard some of the hosts say it, that he's been banned. I'm not banning anybody because we can all learn from mistakes. But, you know, don't call with foolishness about somebody ain't doing something and nobody's doing anything and nobody in my community. Look at yourself in the mirror. That's the first person you need to be responsible to. If somebody ain't doing something, then you get busy. And then maybe you can attract some of your partners that you be around to get themselves busy. Because believe me, if they ain't doing nothing constructive in those communities, they doing something negative. So they doing something. Thing is, whether you're doing something positive or negative, whether you're a help or whether you're a hindrance. Richard, before we go tonight, I just want to give the lineup. Time for Awakening, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. African Perspectives with Brother Oshi from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Always interesting discussions on African Perspectives with Brother Oshi. And after that, from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening. From 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365.com with Sister Nataki and Brother Talib. They'll be starting their second season soon. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Wednesday, Revive is back with Sister POC from 8 to 10 on Time for Awakening. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy from 7 to 8 on Time for Awakening. And then Time for an Awakening is back on Friday from 8 to 10. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion. As always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take. Fireman.
To save the children.